All right, now this one is a little different. I start it, and I keep going after I say today on Rock in the Suburbs.
Okay.
And you come in at the ellipses, right?
At a gym? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Today on Rock in the Suburbs, look at those fabulous prizes. A dining set, a trip to Sandals Resort, a catamaran.
Jim, why are you talking like a game show announcer?
Because the Dot Dash family is here with a chance to win a lifetime supply of turtle wax.
Did someone put something extra in your red Solo cup?
Maybe. It's more of the house party.
House party.
House party.
The house party rages on. It goes on all week here in the suburbs.
Yeah, it does.
All week.
Yep.
And soon the neighbors will complain to the HOA and we'll be kicked out. So we got to keep this moving along.
I'm looking forward to that, actually.
All right.
I'm going to be running through the backyard.
Making fun of adability, you know.
So we're doing our house party all this week here in suburban D.C., it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us are the guys from Dot Dash.
Yes, thank
we
you,
We love
man.
Dot Dash.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Everybody slept over. It was a fun night.
So Dot Dash, of course, DC, Power Trio, Power Pop. In this episode, we're going to do some audience interaction.
Yeah.
We're going to play some games, I think.
Oh,
we're
cool.
I got
tail of the donkey.
I got the bottle right here.
That's right. Yeah, you can do that.
How's Parcheesi going to work on audio?
But before we get going here, you wanted to talk a little bit about this book, The Hunter.
Yeah, amazingly. So I know listeners to our podcast know that I'm a voracious devourer of music books, and I always talk about reading on my Kindle because I'm generally up from 2 to 4 a.m. like people my age often are, and I'll read on the low light so I don't wake anyone up. But one thing I do all the time is I get the free sample on the Kindle. It'll give you a little bit of the book. And doing that, I make my cue for books I want to get and purchase the full book. And actually, this one is on my cue right now. I think
camera's
it's
that way.
Hold this up for the camera.
It's about 4 or 5 down on my cue. And sure enough, tonight when Hunter walked in, he gave me a copy of this. And I said, "Did you write this book?" And you said,
"Yes, I did."
You did write this book. So this is The Prodigal Rogerson, The Tragic, Hilarious, and Possibly Apocryphal Story of Circle Jerks Bassist Roger Rogerson in the Golden Age of LA Punk, 1979 to 1996. So talk a little bit about what motivated you to write this book and why you did. And
well, the first punk rock record I ever bought was when I was 12 years old. I went to the Willow Grove Mall in suburban Philadelphia, and I got this this compilation that was called The Best of Rodney on the Rock, Volume 1.
Yeah.
And that's Rodney Bingenheimer, the legendary Los Angeles DJ. And it had sort of all the punk rock heavy hitters on there, like Black Flag, the Circle Jerks, Agent Orange, the Adolescents. So that's actually how I discovered all of them.
And
punk rock is the music that I love. But it came with a complimentary issue of Flipside.
Okay.
And that complimentary issue had interviews with all the bands. And so I opened it up to the Circle Jerks interview, and they were all talking. It was sort of your typical band interview, much like this one.
Right.
And then there's this quote from Roger Rogerson that says, "I've got one f***ing thing to say. I've been playing guitar for 15 years. I went to college and I can play classical music. I can play Beethoven's Fifth with my dick tied around the fretboard on any guitar.
That's but where I'd you got rather that expression play world from. Up."
Don't step on the quote, Pops. "But I'd rather play World Up My Ass or Deny Everything, which is a great song I wrote. I can play in my sleep. But this is the most energetic, statement-oriented band I've ever been in, including 47 cover bands, 4 punk bands that never made it out of the mask, a disco band, country western." And the interviewer says to the rest of the band, "Where did you find him?" And so the whole book is sort of about that. He dropped off the face of the earth in 1983, and I always wanted to know where he went. And nobody ever answered that question to my satisfaction. So, I did some inquiring, and this is the story.
Wow, fantastic. I can't wait to read it. I'll probably finish it tonight.
I was going to say, yeah, you'll have it be done great. Before this podcast is over.
I might, yeah. And you've done it sort of oral history style, much like we've got the Neutron Bomb, right, which covered that. So that's really cool. And it looks like you talked to all the key characters.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I talked to everybody that was in the Circle Jerks with them. You know, I talked to ex-wives, ex-girlfriends, people, pretty much anybody that knew him, I talked to him. There were some people that wouldn't talk to me, but, you know, and they all had sort of very refreshing, unique voices. So I thought, you know, I could make this duller and sort of write it in a normal narrative, or I could just use their quotes. So I used their quotes.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait. So that's, quite an achievement. Fantastic. Another facet to Dot Dash that we did not know.
It's amazing. Cool. Hunter came and just, came bearing gifts. He brought all this stuff over. It was beautiful. Great. I just want to say before we get going, before we do any more of this interview, that the house right now is sort of divided like a middle school dance.
A little bit,
Yeah. All the males
square dance?
On one
Anybody
side.
Anybody want a square dance?
What you girls doing over there?
All the women on the other side, so I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Let's hear a little of Dot Dash.
Absolutely.
And then we're going to come back and we're going to try a new game on Rock of the Suburbs.
Okay.
I don't know how
I'm
this is going to go.
I'm excited about it.
Well,
okay.
Don't get too excited.
Okay,
temper your enthusiasm.
All right.
We'll see how it goes.
It's going to be terrible.
You know what I want to play? We played this once before on the show, but normally we just play like clips of songs. Right. But these guys said we played the full song.
Isn't
so I'm very excited about this. Mm-hmm. So I want to play this song again to get it in full. Okay. All right?
Mm-hmm.
It's TV radio.
Right.
It's so great.
Who just got back from Carolina, to the man in a wig talking about China. You gotta lose it if you wanna find it. It's on the TV, it's on the radio. Living above a bodega, I was snorting the remains of Mr. Alan Vega. They were throwing dice, I was throwing shade. You don't have to make it up if you got it made. It's on the TV, on the radio.
Great song.
Yeah, amazing
great
song.
Love
yeah.
that song. I want to mention, too, that Danny has that drummer's thing where he has to play along.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
that's
play
very
on
cool.
on the table. That's fine. It's yeah. good. All right, guys. A couple things. Patrick mentioned the video when we were talking about holding up the book
yeah.
to the video. And in case you don't know this, we are being simulcast right now on VH1 2.
That's right.
That's the name of the channel. VH1 2.
VH1 2 classic.
Yeah, VH1 yeah. 2. So...
It's between VH1 and VH3 only on your radio dial.
Yeah. Something
you have to
like
have an
that.
HD radio.
I think so. You have some special helmet I think you have to wear. Okay. Right. We're going to try this. We never tried this before.
Okay.
We're going to try playing a game with the band.
Okay.
Because that's what they do on all the late night shows. And, you know, so let's try that here. So here's what I have. All right. So I have your, I have the band members' names each individually written on these slips of paper. So you each get a Hunter.
Okay.
All right. And you each get a Terry.
Okay. I'm following you so far.
If I can't get the Danny ones right, I'm in real trouble.
So. And you each get a Danny. All right. So you have a complete set of band members.
Uh-huh.
Slips of paper. And then I'm going to ask you a series of questions.
Are you going to give us pens?
No. All you have to do.
Hold it up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. That's exactly right. So see the camera there. All you have to do is when I ask the question about the band member, about the band, you're going to hold up which band member, you know, at most is your answer, which one it most applies to. Does that make sense?
Sure.
We'll see how it goes. I don't know. All right. So and the idea is sort of like you all kind of do it the same way. So, you know, you don't want to cheat off each other.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. So the first question is, who's the hardest working member of the band?
Terry, Danny, and...
Oh, I see.
It's definitely not him.
We got two Terrys and a Danny. Yeah. So we
must note the Danny voted for himself.
It probably is. Physically, he has to do a lot of stuff.
Because of being the drummer.
I'm going to fix it. You're switching
to Danny. Okay.
The Virginia recount, you know, will acknowledge the
I
think you just
don't blame me. I voted for Terry.
I think it's just the same.
You're not going to vote for your dad anyway, so
you're grounded.
So just by virtue of being the drummer and sort of all the work that entails,
he's just very dedicated in a good way.
Okay, you know, so. Are drummers typically the hardest working members of bands?
No.
I've been in a band where that was definitely not the case.
Absolutely.
Yes. Except when they are.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Are we ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the funniest member of the band?
That's a tough one.
No cheating. All right, we got...
Terry, yeah, there you go.
So Hunter voted for himself.
Wait a second.
Terry voted
for yourself twice.
But then I
changed
you
my vote.
No, I changed it to you.
All right, okay.
And Danny voted for Terry. So what makes
Hard
Terry...
Hard to believe that the singer votes for himself in every single category.
Yes, that's unusual. And I would have voted for Hunter, in all truth... Hunter is a very funny fellow, except all of his jokes are about me. So that's why I honestly cannot pick him. In a cruel sort of way.
A Lord of Flies kind of thing.
Yeah. I invented the nickname Pops.
Yes. What makes Terry funny?
it's interesting with Terry because particularly at shows, he tends to be very quiet and soft-spoken. But once he opens up, he's just got a great sense of humor, and he tends to, like John Stab, for those of us who knew John Stab.
Rest in power.
Once he starts riffing, he just gets on a roll, and it's a lot of fun. So,
all right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That wasn't very funny at all. Okay, next question. Who would be the best hired session musician?
That's easy.
Oh, wait. A little bit cheap. We got to vote for Hunter,
Danny.
Another Hunter and a Danny. Hunter, why Hunter?
I think he's the best musician in the band, honestly.
Early you said like a 12-year-old can play his parts.
No, come on. I said a 15-year-old. It was a 15-year-old, but it's a very accomplished 15-year-old. Sam's right. Very good. No, I got to be honest. You know, I think Terry writes great songs, and he has a very unique style playing guitar. But I think in terms of pure musicianship, I think that Hunter could plug into any band that he wanted to and do well. So,
because nobody can hear the bass.
Exactly. And it's only the bass. You know,
it's only got 8 strings.
That's right.
Who has the biggest record collection?
Danny.
All three.
Danny
sweeps the board.
Yeah.
Tell us about your record collection, Danny.
It used to top out above 5,000 for albums and probably about 1,500 to 2,000 singles. But when I bought my house many years ago, I sold the bulk of my collection to Joe's Record Paradise.
Wow.
Including God Save the Queen on A&M and all sorts of like super valuable records. But it's how I made the down payment on my house. And then about... I want to say about 2 or 3 years ago, we went through some financial stuff, and so I sold off a huge chunk of stuff to Bobby Polsky, who used to run Smash Records. Mm-hmm. And so now it's down to about I want to say 900 albums and about maybe 400 or 500 singles.
And so, are those just the ones you can never part with, or are they mostly DC punk?
No, honestly, I sold the stuff that was most valuable and the stuff that meant the most to me, honestly.
Is that right?
Because it's what got me the most money. Mm-hmm. But it's weird. I hung on to certain things that nobody else would ever think is collectible or would really like. But, you know, for me, music is a very personal thing. So I kept like all my Monochrome Set records and my John Otway records and you know, Undertones records and stuff like that. But, you know, I let go a lot of the really valuable stuff.
So. Right. Let's talk about a band that's underrated, the Monochrome Set. We need to do a show on them at some point.
I named Strange Boutique was named after Monochrome Set.
I played some shows with them.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Hoboken and New York. And
wow.
They're great. I love that band.
What a band. What a band.
Yeah, they're so
amazing.
Great.
Yeah. And one of the coolest guitar players of all time, Lester Square, not just in the way he plays, but in his sense of style, is just amazing.
Yeah, I have a good name droppy rock tune or rock tale that involves Lester Square, the, you know, the amazing guitarist of the Monochrome Set, you know. And I think there's this thing they say when Morrissey and Marr got together, you know, Johnny Marr flipped through Morrissey's box of 7 inches, and they were all like girl groups and things, but there were two Monochrome Set 7 inches, and he was like, oh, you know. So anyway, we played with the Monochrome Set in New York and in Hoboken, and at the Hoboken show that Maxwell's and another thing, there's this thing that, you know, Johnny Marr, this amazing guitar player, that he was sort of a Lester Square head, and you can definitely hear that, right?
Sure.
And so Lester Square, who goes by the name Tom in real life, came up to me and said, could I use your amp for this show? Is that amp over there?
Yeah, it's right
and
here.
And so this I said, amp. Yeah, sure. And so he walked away, and then he came back and he said, oh, I'm going to change the settings. So do you want to write them down or take a picture or anything? I was like, no, just whatever. So he walks away. And then I realized, you know, and anyone who plays guitar will know this. I don't think I realized it till way far in the game. Like it's not the guitar, right? I just pick guitars by the way they look. I'm like, oh, look, that's trying, you know, it's a teardrop. I'll have that one. Right. But it's the amp. That's the sound, right? And I was like, oh my God, Lester Square is going to, you know, set up my amp. Settings. Like I'm going to like glue the knobs, you know, in place. Like, you know, I'm just like, seriously, like I'm just gonna like do what he does. So I go up there and look at them, and except for the volume, it was, you know, bass 10, mid 10, treble 10, presence 10, reverb 10. And I said, that's not what I was expecting. That's an interesting approach. And he said, oh yeah, you know, I used to kind of sort of do all this stuff, and then I realized just put it all out there, and you know, just if you want it louder, play it louder. If you want it softer, play it softer.
That's
so
right.
I thought that was really cool. Just tens across
that's
the board.
Pretty wild, yeah.
But there I was thinking like it was going to be some weird voodoo, and I was going to, you know, glue the
magic,
knobs in place.
The magic.
But there it is.
You also had the other great, and not to give you more speaking time because Lord knows you get enough of it. You have the great story about Radiohead as well.
Right.
And Tom York borrowed your guitar.
Right?
Thorough research.
He tells it every time he goes out. Like, you know, he stops at McDonald's and he tells the guy.
I played in this band called Glowworm, and there was a girl singer and a guy who did kind of like percussion, and I played acoustic guitar. It was sort of like a fake and not as good as, but I mean it was good, but like everything but the girl, we were trying to do that kind of chunk, 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 you know, kind of thing. And we opened for Radiohead, which is a crazy weird bill, and they had their equipment, it was on their Benz tour, their equipment had been stolen the night before, out of a van, and they went to that SIR rental place in New York and got all stuff, new stuff, and they had forgot to get an acoustic guitar. And so Tom Cruise was there.
Tom York was in the band.
And this is the thing. I've come to appreciate them, but at the time, I didn't really know anything about them other than Creep.
Right. A lot of people
which
didn't.
I liked. Yeah. And I know like they don't like that song, but I think that's like a killer, like Louie Satisfaction, like iconic, you know, song.
That was their WHFS song.
Yeah. And he came up and he said, could I use your guitar? And it would be totally wussy to be like, you know, so I was just like, yeah, sure, of course. And I remember thinking like, man, that thing's going to be kindling because they're, you know, it was like the time of grunge. And I was like, I was convinced they were like a British grunge band. And I'm like, it's just going to be ruined. But who cares? It's a $100 guitar. Who cares? And he comes back to me and they had like a crew and guys walking in and out of buses and stuff, and it comes back to me, and it's like got a new bridge, new strings, you know, like a strap, you know, all this stuff. And it was just, I was like, is this my guitar? You know, and it was just totally like worked on and redone. So yeah. Yes, he did use my guitar. That's amazing. I still have this strap. It's like in the back of a closet, and it's tiny.
Yeah,
he's an elfin dude. Yeah, it's like it's almost like a thing you'd put around your neck.
I love that. Yeah, he had a good guitar tech.
The weird 6 degrees of separation of that too is that the guy who probably made the changes to that guitar is my friend Duncan, who was the guitar tech for Swerve Driver when I was in Swerve Driver, right. and he is still when I left Swerve Driver, he left. As well to join Radiohead in 1992 and has been their guitar tech ever since. So he was probably the person who swapped out those guitar parts.
Pretty amazing.
So, yeah. Small world.
Yeah. Very cool.
Wow. It's an amazing story.
It's good stuff. Yeah. See? We could sit here all night.
The game is working.
Yes, it is,
right.
Jim.
Oh, yeah. All right. There you go. Sorry.
All right. One more question for you guys.
Okay.
Who in the band is the most stylish?
And Hunter took a glance.
I don't really consider us a stylish band.
That's why you're mods, right?
I'll go with
sort of.
Yeah,
there you go. Mods. It's nice to ask everybody.
So
else.
So everybody voted for somebody else. So
well,
yeah,
we
so
all sort of. I won't say we dress alike, but I mean, you know, that it's. I don't know. It's not like we all just wear white t-shirts and jeans like the Ramones or something like that.
Well, you know, this is kind of interesting. And you know, I know we touched on it yesterday for just a tiny bit, but just talk a little bit about why you think this band has lasted as long as it has. You guys obviously get along pretty well. Are you just old and not cranky
we
anymore?
We spend absolutely no time together.
Is that right?
Because well, I think that if we did, we'd probably have killed each other by now. So this is as long a time as we've spent together in 8 years. So
you guys might break up on air. That'd be good.
Music has gone like sort of backwards for me. When I was younger in groups, I liked doing it, but I always sort of felt like that band that played the Radiohead thing. Like we used to get off our shows and I'd be like, why, who cares? Why bother? You know, and as I got older, you think it'd be the other way around. Like when you're young, you're totally into it. When I was younger, I liked music, but I just sort of felt like, you know, and I'm sure it's just like an aging thing, but like this has just been fun. And so it's gone backwards for me of being more excited about it, more engaged in it. The longer time has gone on, which is not quite what you'd expect, but that's how it's played out for us. And also pretty just cool. Because we've been able to get lots of records out on this little label that has put them out. And
cool.
Why not?
But you also, I mean, you know, you get to a certain point in age and it's amazing how, you know, there are people that get to our advanced ages that can't like show up on time or like something's always wrong. They always like miss stuff or like, you know, like their car's not working or, you know, and if you find like three people that can all show up, like,
are you talking about somebody specific now?
No, I mean, nobody in particular. Like, look, everybody that's been in this band, I really like and I've really enjoyed it. But, you know, it's not that easy to find people that want to play music when they're middle-aged that are like fully functioning, responsible adults and can show up on time and like do what they're supposed to do for like an hour and a half. And then like after we go home at the end of practice, like, you know, their family's not calling you to ask where they are or anything. So, you know, I feel like
that
really
does describe somebody that was in the band. But,
we are three functioning adults that get along reasonably well, and he writes really good songs. Yeah. And,
yes,
you know,
he does.
It's a good excuse to get out of the house.
I'll tell you something else, and it may sound a little bit mawkish, but when I was younger and, you know, I got to play in loads of bands in DC and open up for a lot of bands, and I toured and I did all this stuff, and I always took it for granted. I always figured, like, this is going to go on forever. I'm just going to be able to do this as long as I want, and I'll be able to, you know, travel the world and do all this stuff. And then you reach a certain age, and it becomes a lot harder. And so one of the things that I do love about this band, and I think the thing that gives it so much longevity, is I no longer take it for granted. It's like everything that we do, like this, is something I'll remember. And everything else I just sort of let roll under the bridge or whatever. So,
you'll remember this day forever.
I will. You know, yeah. Jim and Patrick, you know, right. It will be. I'm going to get a Jim and Patrick tattoo as soon as I leave.
Oh, very good. Of course. Yeah.
When the police bust in the plate-glass window later to shut us down.
We have a tattoo artist in the living room over here.
That's good to know.
That's right.
Good to
know.
Yeah, it's a complimentary gift.
It's the bitch.
Get one on your way out. I also want to mention Danny was the first one here today.
That's right.
So he won the prize. He won the
I am always, no, and you to be fair, and they will say this, I am always the first one at every show because drummers have an innate sense of timing. We know when to do it.
Ah, very good. Yeah. So. Yeah. You get the punctuality pin like on Rushmore. Right.
Okay. I get the attendance prize.
All right. So here's what we're going to do real quick. So we're going to do a little promo break real fast. And then the party guests, do you guys have questions for the band? Would you like to ask some questions? Anyone? Or I can bring out the bag of questions.
If you need to know, it's boxers.
All right. So hold it. All right. Okay. So we'll do that after the break.
Submitted in writing, please.
Very good. Okay. All right. So let's do our little promo break here. I have a script here for this one. And I need...
You mean the last one was ad-libbed?
No, it was not ad-libbed. No,
okay.
But I mean, I have a printed script for this one. I need one volunteer. You will have lines, and you need to have a good, like, deep, booming voice. And if you can participate.
Where's Brandy?
Anybody else? Yeah. Anyone? Come on.
I'll do it.
All right. It's two pages. There you go.
In a world filled with musical overload, where thousands of new bands are generated and regenerated every day, a disoriented public cries for help. Many good citizens find themselves paralyzed, trapped in an individual sound cycle, but two men stand together to fight for truth, justice, and pressing play.
Patrick, look, over there.
Holy Toledo, Jim. That person is stuck in a music bog. He keeps listening to the same half dozen bands over and over again, and he can't get out of it.
We need to help him. Hold on there, citizen. We're coming.
Yeah, as long as there's no heavy lifting involved, though, you know, because of my back and all that.
Wherever there's musical distress, wherever there is audio injustice in this world, Jim and Patrick heed the call every day.
Wait, Jim, I'm picking up something. A cry for help. Someone is getting bombarded by streaming music from all directions. She can't keep up with it all.
To the suburbs, Podmobile.
Wow, this is a pretty sweet ride, Jim. I mean, look, a tape deck.
Of course. I mean, you can't be true heroes without a killer soundtrack. Want to blast some tunes?
You read my mind, dude. Where'd you develop that superpower?
Run. Don't walk to your nearest computer or phone. Rockin' the Suburbs is now playing today, every day. Subscribe on major podcast platforms. And don't forget to rate and review Rockin' the Suburbs on iTunes. The fate of popular music, the fate of the world really depends on it.
Rated R for rockin'.
Nice.
Thank you, Jim.
So thank you. Thank you, Hunter, for that. All right, so we had a question from the crowd. Here we have Bill Horn, I think, wanted to ask a question, right? So yes. Here's the microphone.
Yes. Here you go. Bill on the horn.
Yeah, come over this way. Oh, okay. Well, I don't know.
Maybe they can well, stand next to Hunter. Hi. So we can see you.
All right, here we go. Yes, I just wanted to know about the band name. Why not Morse code?
Well, we figure at some point in time that all record stores are going to convert to the Morse code. So dot dash is the letter A, and we'll be first in the bins. Nice. So
I like that.
Nice. No, but Terry, you can.
It's a song by Wire. It's a song by Wire, and it looks good, and it's easy to say. There was another song by this Irish band called Micro Disney, and they have a really beautiful song called Escalator in the Rain. And I was like, oh, that would be good. But then I sent it to someone. This is right when the band was getting started. And they were like, Escalade in the Rain? You know, and I just thought, oh, man, that's not good. So Dot Dash was the other, you know, the sort of polar opposite, just sort of simple and right. Guttural. So
I couldn't fit Escalator in the Rain on
the
drum. Yeah,
that was a bad idea. I also, we had a band, Julie Ocean, that he and I were in, that for at the very beginning was called Friendship Flower Shop Against the Will. Like that's
wow,
how much
that
they wanted to do a band.
Name.
Like I was like, okay, we'll have a band, but it's called Friendship Flower Shop. And it was like,
okay.
It didn't last long. Cause that's a flower shop on Wisconsin Avenue. I was like, that is a good name.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea,
but
I don't think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Bish.
So, yeah, I have that Micro Disney record, I do believe. Yes, sir.
Everybody
released in 1986. I can 83. See it. 83.
Yeah,
maybe. Yeah. I was working in Streetside Records in Kansas. Anyway, so you guys.
Speak in the microphone.
I'm a drummer. I don't know this stuff.
Good man.
All right, so touring here recently. Tell us about how guys with families go and promote the record.
We did a three, to call it a tour is a bit silly. We did a 3-date tour with Tommy Keane from Baltimore to New York back to DC. We play a lot, what feels like a lot, like maybe 12 to 15 shows a year. We played in New York 5 or 6 times, played in Hoboken, another place in New Jersey, Baltimore Brooklyn. A few times, yeah. Brooklyn. You know, Frederick, which is actually really fun, and this cool is a different place. You know, but we've never toured other than that. I played in a band in England a long time ago, and we toured. We like went from England. We go to Europe for like a month, and you know, it was an indie band, right? And so you're just staying in people's like the other band that you played with house or something. And all I remember is just like, excuse me, sorry. Like I just hate imposing on people. And I don't think it would work now, but I liked touring then, but unless you're just like funding it yourself and doing this really super indulgent thing, let's admit it, you'd be like getting $100 for a gig and then playing $500 for, right. You know, lodging. And just, I don't know. So we play a lot and we do get out of town, but we've never toured except for our 3-date Tommy Keane tour.
And even that New York thing, do you remember? I had to take the Acela up and then get on the subway. I arrived literally 10 minutes before we started playing.
That's right.
And then I had to go back that night because I had to be in court at like 9:30 in the morning.
Right.
It was unfortunate.
You ruined the story, but you're right. I do remember that happening.
Yeah. Well, and truly, that's the hard part about it, because if we decided we wanted to go touring, that's vacation time that you have to take away from work, and that's time that you take away from your family.
We played with Hugh Cornwell, the guy from the Stranglers, and a couple times, and I think he's, you know, sort of, I don't want to say liked us, but he thought we were okay, and he put me in touch with his manager, and because he was doing another string of dates, and I was like, we should do that, we should get those four or five dates or something. Yeah. We would absolutely do that, but then we lost out to I think it was just one or two shows, but it was absolutely the right choice. You know, the Ian Rubbish, the Fred Armisen, like. Yeah. Joe Strummer thing he does. Yeah. We lost out. But I would have picked him too. So, yeah. I mean, if we ever could, if anyone cool asked us, like some, you know, old, you know, like that's our sweet spot, is to open for like punky new wave bands that we liked when we were youth.
I think about that a lot, actually, because I think some of the most fun I've had in the band has been playing out of town and doing stuff like that. And in all the bands I played, and that was always like the highlight of it, was going out and playing on the road and doing stuff like that. So, if the right thing came along.
But mostly we just play around here.
I'd risk the divorce.
In New York, like once a year or something.
Just kidding, honey.
It's Paul Trapp, ladies and gentlemen. Paul from Omaha, Nebraska. You got a question for the band?
I do. Hey, gentlemen, I was wondering if you could go around and just give a couple names from your personal power pop pantheon.
Well, it would be churlish to say we are probably nearest to power pop, but we don't really consider ourselves that. Can you know what I mean? Because like a lot of power pop's pretty kind of cheesy, but that is kind of the zone we're in. But just in general, The Jam, and the Velvet Underground, who aren't that sort of band, but are a real, real favorite of mine, and The Birds, those are big ones for me.
Okay.
Hunter?
I like Terry said, I don't really, I mean, I sort of skew more towards punk rock than power pop, but Jack Grisham, the singer of TSOL, was actually in a great band called The Joy Killer in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And the third record, which is conveniently called 3, is it's my pick for the greatest record of the 1990s.
Really?
And it's it's really poppy and really, really good.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah,
good
very cool.
I'm not even sure what qualifies as power pop, but I mean, if we're talking about sort of like indie pop stuff, the Laws album, I think, is amazing. Mm-hmm. And Teenage Fan Club, to me, could never really do any wrong. Big Star, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. You guys approve?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Thank you, Paul.
So tomorrow, because they're going to stay over again.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
As I mentioned earlier, the doors are locked. We're going to do Perfect Pop.
Yes, we are. I can't
each
wait.
Of these guys is going to pick.
It's going
to
be great.
One song they think is perfect, and you all get to hear that, and we'll have a lively discussion.
Wait,
right?
I have a question. You mean this wasn't your record of the 90s
right here? Oh, my God. Right. Is that Wingtip Slope?
Right. Never actually seen a copy of that on vinyl.
Security.
You guys left our vinyl over by the fireplace.
I did that.
Hello.
Sorry.
And Jim, I have a confession. I think I actually used Katie's toothbrush last night.
Oh. I don't think she heard that. So
no.
All right. Very good. Okay. So we're going to dispense of all the little closing business.
Sure.
Let's just move on. Let's just thank Dot Dash for being
thank
here.
You guys,
you guys
so
are great.
Much.
Yeah. We love it.
Thanks. Thanks.
Happy
Thanks.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And did you enjoy that? All right. So yeah. For the play out, do you mind if I play something a little bit older, not off of Proto Retro or something else?
Sure,
okay.
Because,
you know, I mentioned earlier that their sound has sort of, you know, changed a little bit with different records they put out and things like that.
Yeah.
The song is called Lonely Serenade.
Yeah.
All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lennon.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Thanks again, guys from Dot Dash, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, Dot Dash.
Trots. I haven't heard that term in a while. My grandmother used to always say that.